listening to KPMG's podcast series on topics you should be discussing with your head of tax. I'm Tony Castellanos, partner and U.S. tax practice leader for our industry sectors. On each episode, I'll interview one of KPMG's tax leaders for a specific industry to hear their perspectives about key industry developments and the associated tax implications affecting your decision making. We're glad to have you join us. Today, I'm joined by Benson Barrow. Benson is our tax industry leader for the media and entertainment sector. Welcome to the podcast, Benson.
Thanks, Tony. Glad to be here.
So let's kick things off in our conversation. We'll talk about, you know, some trends and some of the tax implications associated with those trends. So why don't you kick us off by just giving us a quick summary of what you consider the top three trends, challenges, issues, opportunities facing the media and entertainment industry right now?
Sure, Tony. And I'm going to start with streaming. And streaming has been a topic of conversation from an industry perspective for a long time. And as a trend, what we're seeing now is some volatility. You know, we came out of COVID, which was a significant growth period for the streaming industry. People were obviously spending a lot of time at home. You had an acceleration of the cord cutting that was taking place, where households were going from cable packages to streaming at a much more rapid pace than they were previously. You had additional streaming platforms come online from a couple of the major studios. But coming out of that, we're seeing some real headwinds in the industry. You know, you had some significant losses being reported by some of the high-profile streamers and some very public comments by leadership of those entities about a focus on expense management and a reduction in customer acquisition costs. And the streaming economics really impact the industry in a very different way than traditional distribution has previously. And those impacts are being seen. The other disruption that you're going to see with streaming likely going forward is really a shift from, you know, a pure subscription model to more of an ad-based model. You've had, you know, Netflix and Disney Plus both announce ad-based models on the horizon, and that shift will have an impact on the industry as well. Combine that with the fact that the focus on expenses, as I talked about, will have an impact on content spend. The streamers have spent a significant amount of money each year on producing original content in the pursuit of subscribers. That model is shifting. And as a result, you're likely to see the amount of money being spent on content being reduced. And that'll obviously have an impact in industry-wide going forward as well. And one other area where you're seeing disruption with streaming is around live sports. You know, the one area in which linear TV had done a pretty good job of retaining their customer base was related to their subscribers that had an interest in watching live sports. Live sports is sort of TiVo proof, right? You can't, you know, fast forward through it with the commercials. People that are watching live sports want to watch it in real time. So from an advertising perspective, that's a valued spend for that market. But you're seeing, you know, the shift starting with live sports going to the streaming market, and the NFL Sunday Ticket being a really good example of that, with YouTube TV acquiring the acquisition rights to Sunday Ticket. So going forward, you'll probably see a continued shift of the deals that are being struck traditionally with over-the-air channels and cable networks, probably shifting to the streamers as well. And what impact will that have on the industry as a whole? So I think if you talk about streaming and the trends, it's really just continued disruption. And these are really some of the areas that I think you'll see that playing out in the next year or two.
There's a lot to unpack there. So before we get into maybe doing that, there's a couple more trends I think you want to share with us at a high level.
From an M&A perspective, again, going back to the COVID era and now coming out of it, in the M&A space, the COVID years led to a significant amount of deal activity. The focus on acquisition of content and what I'll call bigger deals, you're seeing significant slowdown in that pace. The activity rate is much less. And obviously, that's being driven by market conditions, valuation declines and volatility, and now a higher interest rate environment is really putting pressure on getting these deals to occur. And then from a content perspective, you're seeing a shift away from what I'll describe as the content is king strategy, which has been going on for a very long time, that drove a lot of M&A activities. And that's going to drive, you know, the market going forward and determine who the winners and losers are. You're seeing that really decline in activity in the last year or so, and expect that to continue. And then really the third trend is on global production of content. Again, we go back to COVID, we see an acceleration of production taking place outside of the US, even for US-based content. A lot of that driven by restrictions and studios and streamers wanting to find jurisdictions that they trusted would be available for them to produce in and not have shutdowns or lockdowns, which can be very detrimental to a production. So that is continuing to accelerate, much more focus on producing content overseas, and really just like other industries, looking for a reliable supply chain, and also the continued importance of tax incentives. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention KPMG produces a film and TV tax guide that can be found on our web pages. We're just in the process of launching an updated version of it. We've got 35 countries that we have profiled. These are 35 of the top destinations for film and television production. We have a discussion on each country's tax regimes, its incentive programs, and we're seeing that become even more valuable today as our clients are continuing a focus in shifting their production from the U.S. and overseas. And the idea with that, again, is to have reliability. They want to have multiple options. If there is disruption in the future, they want to have the ability to have experience and a base of production in multiple countries, so that if they need to shift it from one country to another, they have the infrastructure and the ability to do so. So those, Tony, are really the three trends that I'm seeing, you know, from an industry's perspective going forward for, let's say, the next year or two.
Yeah, there's a lot there, Benson. And before we get into some of the tax implications associated with these trends, maybe just a few questions on this. Given what you described early on with streaming and then how that integrates with M&A, do you see a trend towards consolidation in the industry, especially on the content side, as these businesses continue to evolve? There's a lot of streaming channels out there, and consumers are looking for value, and there's a consolidation potential of audiences and that kind of thing. Is that something that you see continuing to take hold and have more momentum?
Yeah, I think so. You're starting to see who the winners and losers are from a streaming perspective. You know, all the major studios, really except for one, has invested in a streaming platform. Part of that is sort of the disruption that you're going to see over the next couple of years. Part of it could be sort of the economic forces in a potential recession that are shifting, you know, a focus on consolidation. Part of what I talked about earlier was a focus on cutting expenses, operational type exercises that are taking place in order to make, you know, the profitability of these platforms more acceptable to the studios and the streamers. And one way to do that is to consolidate. And then maybe, you know, more possible from a valuation perspective as things play out here over the next year. But I think it's becoming more clear sort of who the winners and the losers are within the streaming industry. And I think you're likely to see some consolidation going forward, to your point.
Let's talk a little bit about the tax implications of some of this, Benson. Let's go to global tax reform. Where do you see the impact of that on the media and entertainment industry? Now, when I say global is, you know, an aggregation, or, you know, the cumulative impact of micro tax legislation, right, country by country, with an overlay of, you know, organizations like the OECD, where you have some coordination of that. Why don't I hand it to you and give us some thoughts on what that looks like from a media entertainment standpoint?
Sure, Tony. Most companies in the industry reacted initially when the first BEPS proposals came out and assessed what those rules' impact would be to them. And the companies that had, you know, what I'll describe as maybe more elaborate structures internationally, maybe ones that had the use of tax havens. They really structured out of those structures and into ones that would be more what I'll call BEPS compliant. So most of them have, from a structural perspective, and put themselves in a position where they're prepared for Pillar 2, for example, and what's coming down the pipeline from a global tax reform perspective. But what I think you're going to see going forward and the impact from an industry perspective is really more on, you know, increased reporting and a requirement for them to be more transparent about their organizations on a global basis. And I think that's going to lead to probably more focus and discipline on intercompany transactions and licensing. From an industry perspective, there is, you know, a significant amount of intercompany licensing that takes place. You know, it really depends on what sector you're in as well. You know, film and television versus, let's say, music. You can have organizations and entities around the world that have IP in them, and you have, you know, hundreds of intercompany licensing agreements and what's coming down the pipeline, like I said, is much more reporting and transparency about that. So more focus on transfer pricing and maybe organizations that didn't feel that as being a risk or focus area probably will find that to be an area that they're going to dedicate more resources and time to, which is really more operationally. And also here in the U.S. with the corporate, you know, AMT coming into play as well, you're seeing more clients reach out about how that will impact them, you know, even not the larger companies that are already subject to it, but we've had several clients, for example, that, you know, project themselves to be in it or, you know, affected by it to sort of look at it from an industry perspective and how those rules apply to them. So I think overall, from a global tax reform perspective, the headlines would be much of the work has been done, and really going forward, it's going to be around reporting, transparency, and transfer pricing.
What about digital services taxes? That's been a growing, you know, in popularity. 40, 50 countries have imposed a DST. How does that fit into the global tax reform landscape?
Yeah, I think for the most part, if you look at, and again, your natural sort of inclination probably on that is like streaming content or user-generated content that people are accessing through platforms. You know, most of that is covered by other indirect taxes, VAT, GST. And generally, those regimes are not ones in which the streaming platforms are generally subject to the tax on those types of transactions. So overall, it hasn't been an area that has had a direct impact, but there's definitely a concern. And we've seen that actually domestically, too. A couple of states have tried to enact a DST type regime that targets a broad base of technology service providers, and those haven't generally seen the light of day because of various issues. So it's definitely on the radar. It's definitely a focus, but generally the industry has found themselves not being subject to them.
Let's switch our conversation back to incentives and credits on productions. And you mentioned the KPMG guide on this. Clearly, this is a very big part of financing content, of financing films and other forms of production. So it's very important, plus the infrastructure point that you made earlier. So this is something that's here to stay and very competitive. So let me hand it to you on a little bit more detail on that.
As I talked about earlier, much more focus on global production and the percentage of content that's produced domestically versus internationally. Obviously seeing that shift. A lot of the focus has been on the countries that historically have been destinations for U.S. studios and streamers. For example, Canada, U.K., Australia, New Zealand. And by no coincidence, it's because those countries offer very generous and robust incentive regimes. And the studios, U.S. studios and streamers are very comfortable with them. They're predictable, and they provide a significant financing, as you said, to the overall cost of the budget of either the motion picture or the series. One trend that we're seeing is a focus on what I'll call lower cost jurisdictions, you know, just like you see in any other industry that's looking for a reduction in the cost of you know, manufacturing or the production of its product. The same thing is occurring in content. As an example, we're seeing a lot more of our clients producing content in Eastern Europe because the cost of producing that content is less. You know, the cost of the crew, the cost of running the equipment, you know, all the costs that, you know, make up the spend on production. And then combining that now with incentives that those countries in Eastern Europe are providing and incentivizing U.S. Production companies and studios to come to their jurisdiction and produce. So that is a significant trend, and I would expect that to continue. And you may see more countries looking to get into the fray and come up with incentive regimes that will attract U.S. studios and streamers. But as I mentioned before, one of the things that they particularly value is consistency and a lack of volatility. So they're very much looking for, you know, jurisdictions that they have historically had experience with. The same thing applies domestically as well. It really is the usual suspects as it relates to the states as well. You know, Georgia, Louisiana, New York continue to be quite popular destinations for productions based on the programs that they offer. They're mature, they've been around a while, they have generous amounts that they can set aside on an annual basis, or they're uncapped in certain instances. And the monetization of those credits through either transferability or refundability is what's really driving that popularity. What we are seeing is the potential for some legislative changes. And that's really coming from an industry push for more flexibility in monetization. You know, as I said, those three states are very popular, but there's about 40 states that offer incentives. And some of them have some challenges in actually monetizing those incentives. And California is one as an example. And in the most recent governor's budget, there actually is some language in that budget about changing the program in California to make it more flexible, to have it have a refundability component. So I think you'll see that push, you know, from an industry perspective continue, and probably some other states looking to do some things to make their programs more attractive as well.
Yeah, these programs are only, you know, as good as they're able to generate cash or a monetization event. If you're getting an incentive and then you have limitations on the ability to use them, then they're obviously less valuable, unless you can sell them. But even there, it becomes, you know, a discounted value rather than the full value to the companies that are being granted these incentives. Benson, there's a thought here that relates to the economic cycle, both as it relates to what you were saying earlier on the losses that are being incurred by especially the big streaming companies as they amass subscribers, but now seeing some subscriber losses and consolidation there, but also as it relates to what you were just talking about in connection with incentives, right? In an economic cycle, where do these incentives typically go? Do you have more of them or less of them? I would think in a downturn in the economy, you may have less opportunities to gain from incentives. Is that consistent with your thinking as it relates to an economic cycle in connection with incentives?
Yes, absolutely. I think that will be, for example, the pressure on the proposal in California, right? The politics of it likely will put some pressure on the cycle, and the fact that tax receipts, for example, are now probably projected to be less. So if we offer more generous incentives or ones that are, you know, easier to be monetized, then we're going to end up putting ourselves as a state in a worse position. It's a very political process, state incentives and international ones as well, right? The current or projected future economic conditions, I think, do have an impact on that. And if there is a downturn, then you're likely to face much more pressure on those incentives and the generosity associated with them than you would in an environment where there's a more positive output.
It's typical with many things. When you need it most, it's less available. and when you need it less, the jurisdiction, states, and countries are competing for the business and offering more incentives. Let's just take another view of this from an economic cycle. So if we are moving towards a recession, What are the other implications that you see for the industry?
You know, I really think there is some impact to the advertising market going forward, and it may not necessarily be a reduction in advertising spend. You'll probably see a slowdown, but what you're going to see is likely a even greater shift to digital. You know, there's been a shift from sort of the traditional radio, TV type newspaper publication type advertising to digital advertising. And I talked to you earlier, for example, about some of the big streamers announcing ad-based models and what will the impact be? That'll probably be a boost for the ad tech, you know, aspect of the media industry. So I think that that shift and the acceleration of that shift will probably be an impact of a slowdown or a recession in the future. I talked before about the impact on content spend, you know, the budgets that the studios and content producers have probably being compressed further going forward. And that pressure on budgets will then go to incentives and wanting to make sure that the production budget is getting the largest benefit of incentive as possible. It'll probably create more pressure on shopping around, so to speak, looking at different jurisdictions as well. The other area that, you know, we touched on before is the consolidation or aggregation of streaming. And as things sort of slow down and some of these impacts become more profound, activity in that space will pick up. You know, it really depends on the segments. Talking about media and entertainment as an industry, there obviously are a lot of segments and sectors, and each of them are feeling it differently. But I think when you look at sort of the broad industry, those are really the areas that I think are going to have the greatest impact.
We'll wait and see what happens. Final question. What is the one question that you would advise CFOs of media and entertainment companies to ask and discuss with their heads of tax?
Yeah, and it's really a question that I get from my clients and at board meetings. From a tax perspective, you know, are we really prepared as an organization to react quickly based on a lot of the topics that we discussed, the significant changes that could occur in the next, let's say, 2 to 4 years with global tax reform, industry disruption, and if there's a downturn? Are we structured in a way that we can be nimble in order to face those challenges? And if we're not, what do we need to do? That would really be the question I would have them ask, because that's the question that I get asked from clients and from board members that I speak with all the time.
And for those chief tax officers to be prepared along the lines of what you're suggesting, what should they be doing? Is it a question of modeling, becoming closer partners with the budgeting and forecasting folks within the organization? What's the thing that keeps them ahead so that they can be a partner to the business, you know, in an improved way, especially during a time of change?
Part of it is operational, right? Is sort of modeling and working with, you know, let's say FP&A and seeing sort of what the view is on how the business will evolve over the next, let's say, 1 to 3 years. Part of it is sort of looking at yourself as either a buyer or a seller in an M&A market. If the folks believe that they could be a potential target, are they structured appropriately for an acquisition? Do they have aspects of their structure that are favorable or unfavorable that they can market if favorable or adjust if unfavorable? It really is around sort of looking at these disruptive activities that might take place and sort of anticipating what they'll mean. And you sort of hit on it, modeling out what the impact would be either way. And having honest conversations with the broader business on what that'll mean so that they're prepared when those times come in the future and aren't, you know, surprised that there are tax considerations that weren't thought of previously.
Yeah, it all comes down to being a partner with the business. So Benson, one last plug for the film financing and tax guide that you mentioned before. It's been in publication for, I think, about 20 years now. And you said our most recent edition is coming out soon. So any final words on that?
Yeah, I think it's a great resource for various folks in the industry. It can be CTOs and folks in the tax department. It can be CFOs. It can be financiers. It really is a comprehensive guide to the industry, film and television industry on a global basis, and really gives very valuable information that can provide answers to the types of questions that executives in the industry are looking for. And you know, KPMG has resources in each of these jurisdictions to assist our clients with those types of questions.
Yeah, and those resources are in the guide at the end of each chapter. We have the contact information there. We welcome everyone who reads the guide to reach out to us for any support, and we're happy to be in touch with you. So Benson, thanks so much for joining the podcast this morning. This has been a great conversation. I know you and I can go on this topic for hours. So we'll have you back for a future podcast on this topic. So thanks again.
Great. Thanks, Tony. This was fun.
You've been listening to the KPMG podcast series on industry tax developments. Thank you for tuning in, and we look forward to speaking to you next time.